table over there. I'm quite intrigued what the carrots are for, but I can pray. It'll all become clear, she said. We'll just pray. Lord, we thank you so much for Lucy, Lord. We thank you that she's a bright star in the church, Lord, and that she lives a life that's totally for you. We just praise you, Lord, and we just pray that you'll open our ears to hear what she has to say, that she'll bring the message of generosity into our hearts, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Could somebody help me and bring the table over here? I know it's not the easiest thing, but it will make it easier in the long run. I was brought up in the good Methodist, good old Methodist church. There's quite a few of us in here. And so today is my sister's birthday, and I always remember my sister's birthday because it was Harvest Festival. And me and Matt have had a bit of a discussion about Harvest Festival and its relevance today. Well, we don't do Harvest Festival in Ashwood. Well, then it just happened that my name appeared by saying I'd quite like to do that someday. So today we're having a bit of a Harvest Festival. Neil said, you should have told people to bring things. I went, no. Because this is a different kind of Harvest Festival. Because we think of autumn and we think of harvest as a gathering in of all the crops. But somebody quite wise said, actually, it's not a time of gathering in. Harvest in autumn is a time where it's about replenishing. Because if you think about it, the leaves fall from the trees. We have, on the way to school, there's a conker tree, and Matilda runs every morning to see if there's some conkers on the floor that she can collect. She's not had any fights with them. I don't think she even knows what you have conkers for, but she's eager to collect these conkers. But the conkers are seeds, aren't they? You know, they fall from the tree, not for just for conker fights, but they fall for replanting, for new life, for something new. And autumn isn't just beautiful because of the colours and everything. It's beautiful because this is a time of preparation. This is a time of gathering in, of saying thank you, but also saying, yes, God, I'm ready for what's coming ahead. Even if it's winter, I know there's a spring coming. And so I put out a little request, because we as a family are incredibly grateful to Ashwood Church. When we were in Albania, you were famous because of your generosity, because of the way we would get emails, we would have visitors. People were forever commenting on people from our church and what you did and who you were. But I knew we're not the only people. And so, we've got a few shout-outs this morning. I'm hip, I am. Hashtag shout-out. Oh, I'm right in there now. Where shall I start? I know, but the beginning's quite long, and you don't want all that, do you, Ronnie? He's my encouragement, Ronnie. Right, cross his name off for a start. June, some of you will know, June sat here, she's got the twins and Isabella, and June's just moved house and benefited greatly from Ashwood. And so there's a list here. Janet Wright, Zoe Bell, Zach Redfern, Christine Redfern, Nick Bramwell, Rachel Brereton, sorry Rachel, Kate Walton, Margaret and Eric, Sherry, Emma, Vanessa and John, Owen, Neil and Heather. June wants to say thank you to you. But in particular, she says it's quite a list, she really wants to thank Zach and Owen. Is Owen here today? Oh, my life. Zach's here, though. Zach, that wasn't the only person who wanted to thank you. You got a few shout-outs. So, Zach, we've got a thank you to you. It's a very nice pretty bag. To say thanks, Zach, for what you do. It is much appreciated. Rachel, could you thank Owen for us? I know. Well, you can keep it and he'll never know. He'll only want what's inside it anyway. And then Owen, it's good, isn't it, when one person says thanks, when one person gets thanks, and actually Owen said, I'm really grateful, this person's going to love this, I'm really grateful for Terry Theaker, the person who most often has heard my rants and had solutions that actually work in real life and not just in theory. For taking me through the job quitting moment when she almost daily reminded me that it had never been about money but about doing what God wanted me to do and that he has done well looking after me so far. So Terry, yay! I just remembered I didn't have that for you, Terry, because Terry doesn't like chocolates. Thanks, Terry, from Owen, but from all of us. I don't think Panna's not here, is she? Is she? Oh, she's right there. I've looked at you and thought how nice you talk with lots of times. Panna, Christine and Dave and Zach and Jacob said, over 23 years of Ashwood, there's lots to be thankful for. They were very grateful for everybody who helped feed them when they moved. But to Panna, thank you especially because you shared your home. And they were really grateful for that. So, Panna, thank you for opening up your home. But also, Simon and Janet, they wanted to specifically to thank you as well for mentoring them and taking care of them over the years. And also, Janet, Jane wanted to say thank you for persisting. You kept on texting her when you knew that she was upset, so eventually Jane agreed to go and see you for a coffee rather than doing something stupid, and she really recognised that as God doing something in her life, and I know lots of us can say that. So thank you, Simon and Janet. Katie kind of emailed, and I could really kind of recognise what she was saying, and she wanted to say thank you to everybody at Ashwood. Whenever she's around, although it's not very often, you're always so welcoming, loving, especially during her time in Senegal and at university. I've always known there's a group of people praying for me and supporting me, and that's been so encouraging and incredibly humbling. It's often been people that don't or aren't always a centre of attention but might hide in the background who have shown me such love. What heroes. She said, I'm not sure if you're doing shout outs. I told her we were and she said that was okay. So she wanted to give a special thank you to Ruth and Joe Caffeldine, who regularly met up to pray for her with her mum while she was in Senegal. So Joe, has Joe gone out? Oh no, Joe and Ruth. Thank you. Oh, it's really hard. There's lots of people here. You don't realise. Christine Gear here? No. Well, we've got one for Christine as well, because especially Katie said that she'd been a rock for her mum. So Elaine's probably nodding her head. Norman and Iris. Yeah, you see, everybody, yeah. Talk about faithful servants as well. You see, I know chocolates aren't good, so you get flowers. Thank you. Matt and Claire, thank you for all you do. Specifically, you were nominated by several people for being a mentor, for all your work, for being a friend and for your support. Thank you. And then we got lists from people that had way too many people in them to specify. for looking after kids, for putting up and taking down tents, for encouragement and wisdom, for decorating a bunch of flowers and a pack of sweets through a door. I know we once had a brown envelope and a syringe through our door. You might think that was a bit dodgy, but that was to pay for our injections before we went to Albania. Never forgot it and told that story lots of times. For sharing a coffee and painting fences. Thank you, Joel. That wasn't me, but you did do that for us. He's very good at painting fences, I would recommend Joel. Sure he's great for that. For praying, for making meals, moving houses, sharing furniture, being friends, being family, being community. Ashwood Church, you are awesome! And so, because there's too many people to individually recognise everybody, but I could probably even myself go round and thank everybody. Here's a little thank you.
Oh, thanks.
That's all right. If you'd like to share them out, that would be great. If you just want to keep them to yourself, that's fine. But maybe a little greedy. That box nearly empty. Oh, Tony might be missing out. Got one here. Who hasn't got one already? It's just sitting on the table. Ronnie.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you know what? I love Ronnie. I've always loved Ronnie. He's sarcastic and rude to me lots of times. And I love that. And in Albania, every now and then, he'd drop me an email that was Ronnie. Oh, bless my heart so much, and it's one of the things that carried me through Ronnie's emails. So Ronnie, thank you ever so much for being you. And I want to read this thank you in particular because somebody asked me to. That's a good reason, but it's awesome and it kind of sums up a lot. On the 17th of April 2012, I travelled to fetch my 6-year-old son from school for a routine medical appointment. When I arrived, he'd injured his leg 2 hours beforehand. We weren't to know the extent of the damage for yet another hour when I took him to A&E in my car. Callum had broken his femur. The largest, strongest bone in the human body had been snapped in half. He spent an agonising week in hospital with an abundance of painkillers and his leg in traction. He screamed in pain and I felt completely useless at being a mother, not able to help my middle child, my only son. I wasn't able to enjoy my new baby who was 4 months old. I wasn't able to give attention to my 9-year-old daughter and was unable to support my husband in his transition from military to civilian life. I felt so low and felt like I had let my whole family down. I cried behind closed doors when no one was looking. I had no support from anyone, not even family, because everyone sees me as a strong, confident woman that copes well with everything all the time. And this couldn't have been further from the truth. Callum remained bedbound for 10 more weeks with plaster cast from his chest down to his toes. He remained horizontal. Then one day I was invited to the Ashwood Centre by Kirsty Bell. Her son was in the same class as mine. I never told her about my feelings, but she must have had an idea. I visited the Ashwood Centre for Sunday service and was welcomed by the whole Ashwood family. The service was led by Matt and the whole congregation joined him in praying for healing for my son. I got emotional, but this time my own anger and frustration were simply melted away by the sheer amount of love, support and caring attitude of everyone in the centre. I was overwhelmed by the welcoming nature of every single person towards me, a complete stranger, a non-churchgoer. I left Ashwood Centre after the service
and remember feeling like I had indeed been healed myself. A weight had been lifted from my shoulders. I was calmer and more patient. I began to share my time equally to everyone that needed it. I'll remember that day forever. And the most beautiful thing, I regularly see people from Ashwood who ask me how my son is 3.5 years later. Thank you. That's the difference you make. A life of generosity. I don't think any of those things that I've talked about this morning have been about how much money or how expensive a gift's been given. It's been about little things. Janet was saying this morning, Dave Ransom, I've got another bag, you can have it, Dave, had sent her a text one time that just changed a whole situation. Just a text message. Don't know if this still costs 15p if you're on a different network. Or even it might have been free. But it made a difference to a situation and to Janet's life that she hasn't forgotten. Standing and praying with somebody. Helping. You know, some of us are time rich and money poor. You know, I haven't got loads of resources in money right now, but I do have time. Some of us maybe are time poor and prayer rich. Because we have time when we're driving to work, we have time as we're doing this or time as we're doing that. We might not have time to physically be at somebody's side, but we can pray in those times. It's not about how much money you throw at things. You know, as we're coming up to Christmas, I'm sure everybody in here understands the fact that it's not how big a present or how many presents we give our children that show them we love them. You know, it's just common knowledge that you can throw present after present after present at a child, but actually all they want is your presence. And the same's true with our relationship with God and with each other. It's not about how big a gift we can give to somebody. It's not about how big a gift we can give to God. Steve last week said about God's unconditional love. We don't have to do anything for God. He doesn't ask us to do anything for him. He doesn't actually need us to do anything for him. He's more than capable of doing whatever he wants himself. It's kind of clever like that. But we get to partake. We get to be a part of God's big plan. Because that's a relationship. That's love. God loved us before we said yes to him. That's generosity. Sending your son to die on a cross. We've just taken and remembered a broken body. It wasn't nice. It wasn't just a bit of bread. Thank you for that. It was a body broken, whipped, beaten, destroyed. It was a moment on the cross where Jesus said, Father, and Father wasn't there. It was blood that flowed down because of us. Thousands of years later, in a different land, a different culture, a different place, that is generosity. A God who would die on a cross. He could have summoned up angels. He could have called on all of heaven. He could have done anything. But not my will, but yours, he said, in that garden. It wasn't an easy choice. He wept, he swept tears, he sweated blood. That's not easy. He knew it wasn't going to be easy. He didn't carry that and stumble with that cross going, oh yeah, this is okay because I've got angels helping me. He couldn't even manage to carry the cross himself because he was so destroyed. But he was willing to see it through because of his generous love for us. Before we even said yes, regardless of if we'd have said yes. That's a generous God. Mark chapter 10. It tells us a story of the healing of Bartimaeus. Jesus and his disciples had left town, and a large crowd followed him. This is before his crucifixion. I'm going back in time just in case you're confused in the Bible stories. Sorry. A blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. When Bartimaeus heard that Jesus of Nazareth was nearby, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." "Be quiet! Shut up! Hush yourself!" I added some of those. Shouted the people around. But he only shouted louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me!" When Jesus heard him, he stopped and he said, "Tell him to come here." So they called the blind man. They said, "Come on, he's calling you." Bartimaeus threw aside his coat, he jumped up and he came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. "My rabbi," the blind man said, "I want to see." Jesus said to him, "Go, for your faith has healed you." Instantly the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. It's quite a happy story, Jesse. Oh, it's not Jesse. Not unless you're dressing him in a pink cardigan. Tricked me. A beggar's life wasn't an easy life. Psalm 109 sees where the life of a beggar is wished upon an enemy, that he may howl when he's hungry and even let his posterity be cut off. It wasn't a popular place to be as a beggar. A low person, unrighteous. And here was this beggar calling out to Jesus, "Son of David, son of David." And the people said, "Be quiet." What did Bartimaeus do? Shouted all the louder. I like him. Once I read that bit, I really, really liked him. Because he didn't care what other people said or thought. He cared about pressing through and getting what he knew was his destiny that day. He kept on shouting louder than before. But he kept on shouting. He didn't shout and he could suddenly see. He didn't shout and everything just work out. He was persistent. He kept shouting even when people said, "Shut up, who are you? That's the rabbi, that's Jesus. Who do you think you are shouting? He's going to see better people than you." He didn't go, "Oh, they're right, I'm not worthy. Oh, I'm blind. This is all I should do with my life. I shouldn't shout. Why would Jesus have any time for me? Blah, blah, sad is me, woe is me. I'm in the garden eating worms." He didn't do that. He kept on shouting, "Son of David, Jesus, have mercy on me. Have mercy on me." He didn't judge himself by the outward appearance. He didn't judge himself by what other people said. He wanted Jesus. He wanted his miracle. He positioned himself ready for that miracle. Jesus said, "Tell him to come here." And then suddenly everybody says, "Oh, Jesus wants you. Come on, cheer up, off you go." How rude are people? Funny, isn't it? When somebody else takes notice of us, it's surprising how other people's opinions might change. People are fickle, and it's so important we know who we are in God. We don't base it on whether people are telling us to cheer up or whether people are telling us to shut up. If that's where you're at, if all you're worried about is what somebody else says about you, you need to fix your eyes on the Saviour and change your perspective. Because people will switch and swap according to how it suits them. But Jesus remains constant. Bartimaeus threw aside his coat. He jumped up and he came to Jesus. And I felt this was really, really significant for people here today. Bartimaeus threw aside his cloak. He couldn't see. His situation hadn't changed apart from Jesus had called to him and told him to come here. But he threw aside his cloak. His cloak was his identity. His cloak was his security. His cloak was his finance. His cloak was who he was. He was a beggar. He wore his cloak and people knew he was a beggar. By his cloak, they would give him money. When he threw that aside, he was saying, I'm not going to need this anymore. He still couldn't see. But he threw his cloak aside before he got the miracle. He threw aside the things that other people had said about him. He threw aside the fact he couldn't see. He threw aside the fact that if he didn't have his cloak, he couldn't be begging. He couldn't get money tomorrow. Because he believed that he was going to see that day. His miracle was coming. He was willing to say, I am throwing this aside. And it makes me go, I wonder if he'd have jumped up and run to Jesus, still with his cloak, would Jesus' word still been the same? Your faith has healed you. He came to Jesus without the signs of a beggar, without the signs of a blind man. He came to Jesus as somebody in faith, saying, I'm ready for what you've got for me today. And Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? My rabbi, the blind man said, I want to see. He didn't say, well, Jesus, let me just tell you a bit about my life. This is who I am. Well, I've been here for a long time now because I'm blind and it's been a very difficult life and all this has happened to me. It's been really tough, Jesus. And he didn't say any of that. He didn't go on about how unworthy he was. He didn't say to Jesus, well, Jesus, I would like you to heal me because actually I've been blind for quite a long time and I've been begging and it's been tough. But I am a man of great faith and I am a good man and I would really like you to heal me because of this, this, this and this. He didn't record his worthiness. He also didn't set out a record of his pity and why he should have pity. Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? I want you to heal me. Full stop. I want to see. Full stop. When we come to Jesus, we don't need to tell him all about the things. It's not because he's not interested. He loves us to share our hearts with him. But it's not down to that. He's not going to act or not act based on us selling him something. He is a generous God who is just waiting for us to throw aside our cloak and to say, I want. Go, for your faith has healed you. And instantly the man could see and he followed Jesus down the road. God's question to us is the same. What do you want? What do you want? What I want is different to what you want. It might be you're in that position of comfort like Solomon. You could ask for anything, all the riches and all the wonders, and you're just going to ask for wisdom. Because right now that's what you need more of. It might be, actually, God, I want a job. Full stop. Nothing more. I want healing. I want forgiveness. I want you. And there's not actually a limit on what we ask God for, because he is a God who is generous. But he's asking this morning, dare you ask me? Dare you have the cheek to shout louder, to say, God, this is what I want today. This is what I want from you. Dare you jump up and throw aside all of your identity, all of how other people see you. Dare you stand up and say, I don't want to be recognised like this. This is who I'm coming to you as. I'm coming to Jesus as a person with sight. Dare you do it? Dare you have the faith to say, I'm not going to hold on to that any longer. I am going to believe for the miracle that God has got for me, because he has got it. He is an amazingly generous God. Abraham gave a meal to strangers and received the promise. Naomi gave companionship and gained a family. The Israelites said they were hungry and they received enough food and drink every morning, every day, and they were in the wilderness too. Servants provided water and the groom got the best wine. A boy gave his lunch and got to be part of a miracle. What are you willing to do? Are you willing to jump up and to say, God, this is what I need? And I am not preaching prosperity. I am not saying, God, I need this. Bless my life because I want this. I am not preaching about give me, give me, give me, God. This morning, I want to say, this is about being in a place of living generously. Because what did he do? He got up and he followed Jesus down the road. He didn't just jump up and go, oh great, I've got my eyesight, I can go and do all those things and look at all those lovely ladies that I've never seen before. He didn't do that. He got up and he followed Jesus down the road. As we jump up, as we receive our miracle, then we follow Jesus down the road. It's not about getting for us. It's about getting so we can follow closer. We can follow more dedicated. We can see more. We can do more. We can be more with Jesus. That's what it's about. What do we want? What's our heart attitude? So somebody may have noticed that there's some carrots on the table. Do you know what, though? I was saying to Lisa earlier, I'm a bit disappointed because this is 8 kilos of carrots. It doesn't look it, does it? But then I went, oh, they're quite big, some of these carrots. Anyway, that's by the by. And if you're listening on podcast, you won't know what we're on about. there's carrots on the table. In the Jewish tradition, carrots are part of Rosh Hashanah, due to their symbolic name. So I need my paper. In Yiddish, carrots sound like the Yiddish word merin, which means to multiply and increase. An aspiration of fertility, of prosperity, of provision. The Hebrew name is gezer, the word for tearing up, which Jews link to unfavourable heavenly decrees being torn up. I don't know if you've ever noticed, if you slice up a carrot, there's two things. This is my medical fact of the day. If you slice up a carrot, you know carrots are supposed to be good for your eyesight. It looks like an eye. Have you ever noticed? And they're good for your eyes. It's just a little reminder as you're eating your carrots, children. Good for your eyes. But also, this is more what the Jews said, when they're chopped up into little pieces, they look like golden coins. Oh, somebody's... Well, the people have gone, yeah, they do. And so the Jews would have carrots around this time in their meals as a reminder of God's provision, of a reminder of God's increase. And it's quite risky, this next bit. I have done this before. I haven't spoken this message before. I'm not one of those kind of people. This is all God inspired for you. But I have used carrots before because God told me to. And it was while we were in Albania. And I was leading a worship night. I wasn't doing singing, don't worry. I was speaking as part of it, and God told me to take carrot. Yeah. Just so you all know a little Albanian word there, carrot. And it's sometimes when you do these things, people look at you a little confused and as if you're a little bit weird. When you're in Albania, explain it in Albanian, they look at you a whole lot more confused and like you're even weirder. But I invited people to take a carrot as a sign of them believing and asking God for an increase. An increase of your heart's desires, of your heart's dreams, of the things you want, of the things you're jumping up and asking God for. 9 months later, we had Liliana. Be careful. So, I would like to invite you this morning. I hope we've got enough carrots. You might have to share the carrots in half. To, if you want to, obviously, come and take a carrot. As a sign of you saying, God, I want, and whatever it is you want. I want that healing. I want that freedom. I want that forgiveness. I want that finance. I want that position. I want that friendship. I want that relationship. I want to see. So Matt's going to come and play some music, I'm sure. Or so I'll hum. Oh, Janet's going to add a little. That's good.
When we were praying at the beginning of the meeting, I caught a glimpse of something in my sort of sideline here. And I immediately felt that God wanted to give fruitfulness this morning. And I knew that Lucy was talking about generosity, but I didn't know all this other stuff. And I just felt God actually is wanting to give a real gift of fruitfulness to somebody, or no, actually to more than one person, to a number of people. So actually, if you get that, pick up a carrot, I just want to encourage you that was in my, God spoke that to me before, as well as to Lucy. I just want to really encourage you, because it's not just fruitfulness in lots of things. I just felt fruitfulness in your lives over things that you've gone, oh, is that ever going to happen? You know, is there places of barrenness? Is there places of emptiness that you want something? Or things that you thought, I've planted and I've not seen, I've not grown. It's a day of fruitfulness.
Thanks, Janet. Oh, I like standing at the side of you, Janet, and you're putting a bit in. I like standing at the side of you, you're putting some in. No, it's all right. Yeah, so I want to invite you to come to take a carrot. But then to remember what the cost of that carrot is. Instantly, the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. This morning, we were talking about being generous, a life of generosity. You are free this morning to come and take a symbol of God's generosity, of knowing as you jump up and you laying aside that cloak, God is going to do it because he's a generous God. He's going to do it because he's a generous God. Your challenge is to turn around and to follow Jesus down that road. To give out what you've received. To share your story, to share your love, to be you. In a new place, in a new way. It wasn't easy for Bartimaeus. He'd been a beggar his life. He'd had no sight all his life. Suddenly he could see things. He could see the bad as well as the good. He had no finance coming into his house because he wasn't begging any longer, because he wasn't blind any longer. When you take a carrot and you take the promise, and God meets you, it doesn't mean it's automatically going to be lovely, cozy, happy. It means you've got to follow Jesus down the road, willing to change your whole life. Because that's what he's calling us to. So come, take a carrot, share a carrot, have carrot soup, and bless you.